I just had to make sure that this is the right presentation. I've done three PowerPoints in the last 2 days, so. I called this one Journey, and I want to invite you along with me just to try to imagine and try to reimagine your journey and your story as it goes along with mine. I started in Alberta and Saskatchewan, where I basically lived on reserve. And as I went along, in my journey, I discovered a few things that was absolutely amazing, that reserve life isn't the whole world. Does that make sense? Toronto is ideal for that because I see everybody in New York, they call them boroughs, right? Where everybody lives, everyone's in their little areas and that's their world, that's their existence, that's their, you might as well say their strength and their courage, that where it comes from. And for me, it's more from the prairie provinces, being a boy from the prairies and at the same time recognizing and seeing that which you see right up on your screen, that flat land. The land of big sky, where you can, as Brent Butt used to say on Corner Gas, where you can watch your dog run away for 3 days. We had some wonderful guests one time in our parish, and they were students from Montreal, and they were absolutely flabbergasted and astounded and somewhat overwhelmed with the immensity and the openness of Saskatchewan. The flat lands and where you can go forever, and you know where, you know, as one of the young ladies discovered, I got to go to the washroom, and there's the towns just over there. And I said, yeah, just a short ways. So half hour later, there's the town, just a short ways. And it seemed to never advance, but you could see it, and it was always temptingly on the horizon, it seemed. And they were shocked that it could be anywhere up to 2 to 3 hours between towns that you could drive to. A journey, though, is one that each and every one of us go on. Each and every one of us come up with amazing stories, and it's the story time that we gather and that we share amongst and with each other. I met my wife back in Alberta, and in fact, right now, she's not with us right now. She's gone back to the West to look after her mother, so I do bid your prayers in that sense. But which means that I'm going to be a bachelor for the next coming months. So the worst I could, I told her, is the worst I could do is poison myself, so don't worry about it. But it is my wife that is also my strength, and she is an amazing woman who has walked with me through my journey and has gone with me through amazing things, who has never demanded or asked for a home and stable roots, but instead has been able to willingly walk along with me in new discoveries and, more importantly, to live in poverty as a priest. Just in case you don't know, your priests don't make that much money. When I first mentioned that I was going to be leaving business and I was going to be leaving directorship and management and I was going to be going into the priesthood, my father-in-law, who was a good businessman and a good business head on his shoulders, the first thing that he asked me, he said, "Is there good money in being a priest?" And I said, "No." And why in the hell do you want to do it then? And so I had to explain about a calling and what we are called to and how we are called to ministry. And so my wife, I've asked her if she could put something together so that this way I could try to exemplify, try to put forward all the things that are important to me in my ministry, in my life, and in my journey, and in my story. And it was my wife who, with her artistic eye, put down my travel Bible. She put down a bundle of white sage that you see wrapped in the red twine there. A braid of sweet grass from back out west from my reserve. My eagle feather, which was given to me from chief and council when I graduated seminary. And the chalice that was given to me from a dear friend in British Columbia. These are the things that seem to be very important, focal in my life and in my story and in my journey. And like I said, so this is my gift to you from my wife, Tracy, who can't be here tonight. To become a priest, everything looks really good on the surface. But the reality is that there's storms, that there are things that happen, there are events that are going on in our lives, events that are always seem to be under the surface, and sometimes they're absolutely terrifying. Sometimes they're ever a challenge. And I try to always put forward that brave, strong face, even in the midst of trauma and sadness, to do a Christmas Eve service when there's been a death in my private family, and still give a joyous message. To be able to go out and to do that which has to be done, even though you can't leave because of parish duties. I'm hoping what I'm doing right now is building up the parish priests as much as I can before your eyes. I say this especially just after vestry for most of you, so keep that in mind. Of the storm that's underneath what looks like calm waters all the time. Reverend Lee talked about the acknowledgement. And this is something that is starting to be utilized and used within the diocese, and it's being utilized within the community. It's being utilized in business, and it's being utilized in brochures, which is a good thing. We gather and we acknowledge the sacred land, and it's been the site of human activity for 15,000 years plus. This land is the territory of the Huron-Wendat and the Petun First Nations, the Seneca, and the most recently the Mississaugas of the Credit River. The territory was the subject of the Dish with One Spoon Wampum Belt Covenant, an agreement between the Iroquois Confederacy and the Confederacy of the Ojibwe, and allied nations to peaceably share and care for the resources around the Great Lakes. Today, the meeting place of Toronto is still the home of too many Indigenous people from across Turtle Island, and we are grateful to have the opportunity to work in this community and on this territory. We're also mindful of broken covenants and the need to strive to make right with all our relations. Simple beginnings, as I said. How do you become a priest? Has anyone ever thought about that? Those who have gone through, it's one of those realizations. I was in business. I was an entrepreneur. We ran a restaurant. I was a manager director for emergency operations. I was a paramedic for 19 years plus. I was 2 months short of my 20-year PIN. And in that 20 years, basically, I worked on the front lines, if you will, of all the trauma and the things that people can do to others and themselves. I used to say that there's nothing that could shock me anymore. I delivered babies. I held the hands of the dying. I did the best I could. And it was always that in those moments that you realize the humanity of people. And that which I strive to try to save in their lives with technology, my medicines, all the knowledge that I had and everything else. And still things weren't working. It went right down to the basics that people needed that touch. People needed that knowledge that somebody is there with them that's going to listen to them and not going to leave them, even in the most traumatic of circumstances and times. I remember my legs going numb with the cold as I lay underneath an upside-down vehicle with a gentleman that was basically slipping away. And I held his hand and I stayed with him all through because I had promised, I'm not going to leave you. And I was there with him for his last breaths. I was there to try to help people in the most amazing and traumatic circumstances. And I realized then, it was then that I stayed and I prayed with people. I held their hands and I prayed with them and for them. And it's the realization then that, my goodness sakes, we need to look after the spiritual. I've always known this. I was baptized at the 30-day mark after I was born, as good Anglicans as always are supposed to have done, and where I was brought to the priest to be baptized in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And in my youth, when I knew absolutely everything, I walked away for a while, and then I returned when I actually got wise. And it's then that I realized simple beginnings. simple beginnings. We struggle. We fight. We argue with God. In those moments of always trying to stand up and say, what about me? What about me? And where God whispers back, it is all about you. That and trying to understand where our faith fits into our spiritual and practical life. Of being able to control and bring forward all those things that are needed in what's truly, truly important. I tried to find this picture. Number one, I look nice and young there. I don't have any gray. Or minimal anyway. This is my wife and Gary Graber, one of the men who started to teach me when I went to James Satie College for Indigenous Ministries. And he was one of my first teachers. And so both my wife took our courses. And then one day the bishop called me into the office and he said, have you considered ever going into ministry? And I said, yeah. And he said, we'll think and we'll pray about it then. And so I continued to take courses because I was already a lay minister in charge of our reserve church, because it was one of those circumstances that we recognized that the church had been more or less closed. It had been closed for, well, we only had one service every 2 to 3 years. And that's when you realize how important your church is and your services are, when those church doors close and there's nothing there. In Toronto, here you are incredibly and wonderfully blessed to be able to have all the church around you in your neighborhood. You get to pick and choose by what your minister says, who your minister is, what they stand for, the politics of it. Imagine having a church in your neighborhood that only opens every 2 years, once every 2 years. That's when you realize how important Holy Communion is. And to this day, that has stayed with me. Holy Communion is very, very important to me. But I've been always trying to seek balance of who I am as both a minister and a priest, and in how I came to be here, and at the same time, who and what I am. I was lost and forlorn. And then I met a wonderful priest who came to our house to visit us, and who, you know, it's one of those circumstances as you're going through life and everything else like that, you see a strange vehicle pull up on the reserve at your house, and it's a priest. And Father Walsh got out, and he came, and he started talking, and he had the most beautiful, amazing, wonderful heart. And a spiritual aura around him that was so powerful, it was amazing, that you just wanted to be surrounded and bathed in what he says and what he was doing. And then I met with some other reverends that were for a short time, for 2 months, placed within our community. The Reverend Gordon and Nora Swanson, Indigenous ministers from the PAW. And they were one of those wonderful ones that were easily manipulative. I think most priests are that way anyway. But we're wonderfully manipulative. And they said, would somebody like to do a reading? And of course, everyone knows, you know, how that, you know, my mother is, she's the great motivator. Chris will do it. And so I started doing readings. And I started doing, and before, and when they had to leave, they taught me and they said, well, you can do this. And you can do the, you know, the evening prayer and morning prayer. And so that's how I started in ministry. And then that's why I started taking courses, because if I'm going to be doing that, I needed to know more. And so I went to the bishop came to me and he asked me, he said, have you ever considered? And I said, yeah. And then he said, we'll think and pray about it. 4 years later, he calls me back into his office and he says, I think you're ready. And I said, great. For what? And he said, to go into ministry. He says, so here, and he laid out all the pamphlets of all the theological colleges across from Atlantic to the Vancouver School of Theology. And he says, these are all the wonderful colleges, and every one of them are equal and standing and amazing. They're beautiful. He says, but this is where you're going. And I said, okay. And I looked at it, Toronto. Okay. And I've never been one to turn down and much less be afraid of where I'm going to be called to and what I have to do. And so thus I came to Toronto through an amazing route, and where I basically had to close off all my 22 jobs and responsibilities on the reserve, and at the same time sign over my house to my daughter and her husband and my grandchildren. And my wife and I packed up a half-ton truck, filled to the roof in the back there under the cap, and we drove to the big city of Toronto, and that's how we started here. That was almost 15 plus years ago now, where I started ministry. Since then, it has been a wonderful challenge of trying to find out who and what I am, and at the same time, trying to be what I am called to be as a priest, and at the same time, my heritage and who I am. I'm one of those strange and wonderful priests that I have been wonderfully blessed to be able to say that I am Plains Cree. I hail from the west, from the prairie provinces, and I can say that now because I'm not tied with a parish, because my parishes that before, when they would always be asked, is your priest an Indian? They'd always say, no, he's Italian. So I have been an honorary Italian, Portuguese, anything else but indigenous. And so this is the first time in my life, and does that sound strange? The first time in my life that I have ever been encouraged and embraced to be who and what I am as an indigenous man.